Hey, football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown in the game, but his teammate scores instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you a second chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. With BetMGM's second chance offer, you have a chance to keep the fun going after the first player crosses the goal line. Try a first TD score wager with confidence today. BetMGM, make it legendary. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This specific promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, Pennsylvania, Puerto Rico, or Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 for New York. 1-800-NEXT-STEP for Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 for Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-ALL for Iowa. 1-800-981-0023 for Puerto Rico. Existing customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards paid back and unrestricted withdrawable funds. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
For Hey Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
So you want to be a rock and roll star? No? Well, how about a podcast star? Well, as it turns out, there's a new all-in-one platform just for you. It's called Anchor, and it's the easiest way to make a podcast. And check this out, it's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer, and then Anchor will distribute the podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify and Apple Podcast and, you know, everywhere else in podcast land. And what's even better, you can actually make money from your podcast. Go figure. No minimum listenership on that. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So go ahead, download the free Anchor app right now or go to anchor.fm to get started. So what are you waiting for? Podcast stardom is within your reach.
The music world moves fast. Want to stay up to date on the latest albums and get in-depth examinations with the artists? Check out Consequence of Sound, the podcast. Bite-sized album reviews for the music fan on the go who wants to stay in the know, and much more. Subscribe to the series on iTunes or your favorite podcast provider, and let the writers of Consequence of Sound steer you right. Check it out at consequenceofsound.net/COS podcast. Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith with an audio interview series presented by WFPK Independent Louisville at WFPK.org, Consequence of Sound, and the Consequence Podcast Network. If you're not already a subscriber of the series, I hope you take that moment to hit the subscribe button to keep up with all of the interviews that I put out every single week. One Monday, Wednesday, and Friday every single week over Consequence of Sound. It's a lot to keep up with, but you're a music fan, so yeah, why not? Of course, you can subscribe anywhere you get your favorite podcasts from, like iTunes or Apple Podcasts. You can also follow along at YouTube or Spotify as well. I'm Kyle Meredith. Today, my guest, Donita Sparks of the band L7. L7 are back with a new record called Scatter the Rats. It's their first full-length album in 20 years. And I'll be talking with Donita Sparks about what those reunion sessions were first like. Also, the great talent the band have always had about balancing substance and humor. And speaking of substance, this is the band that created Rock for Choice way back in the early 90s. Unfortunately, it hasn't stopped becoming relevant, but it's definitely more relevant, especially right now with Alabama in the news. So we'll discuss that as well as putting the new record out on Blackheart Records, owned by Joan Jett, and their history with Joan Jett. We'll talk about the songs Burn Baby and Stadium West, and then we'll play the big round numbers game, turning the clock back for the 20th anniversary of Slap Happy. It was the band's final album before that breakup. We'll talk about what the environment around the band was like at that time, putting a record out independently in the late 90s and really stretching out on what the sound that they had been known for as well. After that, it's 1994 for the album Hungry for Stink. This was the first album after they had had their big breakthrough with the single Pretend We're Dead. We'll hit on that and the singles Andre, Stuck Here Again, and Can I Run, and a song called Fuel My Fire played a very important role with this record because Prodigy would end up covering this on the Fat of the Land record, which sold like a bajillion copies and really saved L7's career, financially speaking. They're one of my all-time favorites. It's Kyle Meredith with L7.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here in Louisville.
So this is the first full album in 20 years?
Yes.
Scatter the Rats? It's powerful.
It's so Spinal Tap. we like the record. Do you like the record?
I love the record.
Right
in fact,
on.
That, you know, we're playing Stadium West, too, and that's such a fun single.
I mean, yeah.
What you've always done. The great thing about L7, one of the really impressive thing that I've always loved about you all is, and I think you talk about this too, it's balancing like heavy issues with a lot of humor.
Mm-hmm.
Like that comes in your songs.
Yeah.
Going back into that, and maybe it just comes natural to you, but going into Scatter the Rats, was that still the focus? Like we do want to take on some really big themes here, especially as we heard on those first two pre-singles from the record, but you've still got to, you know, have fun with it.
Well, we are not contrived in the sense that in the way that we write. We just really write from personal experience. And because we're kind of wisecrackers anyway, that sort of sass comes into our songwriting anyway. I think if we were to have a case of the sincere's all the time, that wouldn't be our strong point. You know what I mean? Like some other people are really great at just pouring their heart out in really wonderful ways. And we're just a little too guarded. Or I also think that we've had to be such tough cookies in rock and roll for so long that we can't really go soft. You know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, maybe a little bit here and there, but like there have just been too many battles to show any vulnerability. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, but, you know, I'll bring a few of those up and hopefully I've got these at least close to what's going on in the songs because Fighting the Crave with Addiction and Burn Baby with Feminism and Holding Pattern seems to tackle some depression. And this isn't new for you all, like I said, at all. I mean, you can trace this all the way back to starting Rock for Choice, which was early 90s.
That was early 90s. And we've always had some cultural commentary. You know, Susie's always pretty good at writing about dysfunctional relationships. Mm-hmm. Like she'll go there. I kind of won't. But I would say Holding Pattern's probably the most vulnerable song on the record. So that was written quite a few years ago when I was in a depression and very stuck. And I just thought it was a good song. And so I, you know, threw it to the band and they said, yeah, let's put it on the record. Because I think it's a universal theme of like, you know, I mean, I would listen to public radio all the time. I listen to public radio all the time.
Well,
and I would hear people being interviewed and in my depression. And I would be like, oh, my God, like I am just so disconnected, you know. So, I mean, we've always had kind of a balance.
I brought up Rock for Choice. Is that something you all are still involved with? Because it seems like now's a good time for that.
Now's a great time for that. But I feel it's a younger person's game at this point to step forward and start putting in some time and some effort into playing some benefits for Choice and for other cool causes. Because we've put in a lot of time on that stuff. And, you know, I just think it would be really cool if younger artists were speaking out a bit more about that.
I would say in our world, you know, in the public radio world, and everything, especially a lot of the artists, most of the songs I'm hearing right now are reflective of some way in that. And I mean, we had an artist in earlier this week, Emily Wolf, and her new song is completely speaking about that. So I feel like that flag is being waved to some degree, maybe less so in the mainstream pop world.
Maybe so. In the mainstream pop world. I mean, there's a lot of neon signs that say feminist behind some of these pop stars on stage. It's like, cool. All right. Well, how about playing a benefit for a woman's cause, you know? So I think it's one, you know, if you're going to talk the talk, walk the walk a bit. And I think, you know, but it's sometimes if you're a mega pop star and you stick your neck out like that, you lose half your fans. Mm-hmm. So I kind of understand it. But if you're a gazillionaire, who cares?
Right. So Burn Baby feels like that's kind of heading in the direction that we're discussing right now.
Well, Burn Baby was based on a party I went to and I saw a bunch of peers that I hadn't seen in many, many years. And I was just like, oh, God, that person. Oh, God, that person, you know. And then I was driving home from the supermarket and I was like, well, God, at the end of the day, we'd all burn at the stake at this point. I mean, we're all sort of on the same side. Even if we have personality quirks that irritate each other, it's time to all kind of, you know, circle the wagons and get over your crap.
Have you been watching Handmaid's Tale?
I have watched Handmaid's Tale. Yes, very good.
Yeah, I'm hearing a bit of the storyline, you know.
I suppose that, yeah, there is, but
or
there's
a parallel at least.
There's a lot of female sellouts on Handmaid's Tale, though. You know, so you know, you got to choose sides. Choose your side.
L7 right here. Burn, baby. It's 91.9 WFPK. Again, I'm here with Danita Sparks of L7 talking about this record, Scatter the Rats, which I see is released on Blackheart Records, which Joan Jett's record label writes.
Joan Jett is the mogul of Blackheart Records, and we are very happy to be on their roster, on her roster.
Hey, you've got a long history. I remember seeing on the discography here, there's even a live recording of Cherry Bomb that you all did together.
Well, there is, and you were speaking of Rock for Choice a moment ago. There was a Rock for Choice concert in Los Angeles that we put on, and Joan came out for that, and we were the Blackhearts for a night. So we played.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we backed her up. So that was really cool. And I don't even think she... Yeah, she did have a guitar on, but that was cool being... a non-front person,
yeah,
for me. You know, it was kind of like, wow, cool. All the heat's on her. That's great.
You can hear the touchstones musically of how that connects really quick. You know, I was thinking when you all started, you know, in the 80s, and especially, you know, when the big spotlight came in the early 90s and stuff like that, I mean, chunky guitars were everywhere. And now it almost seems so out of place that you hear a band like L7 with those type of riffs. I mean, I don't know. Do you ever feel like a band out of place, out of time?
We've always kind of felt like oddballs, you know? So I know that producers that we work with are really jazzed on us because, you know, they tell us there just aren't many bands like us, which is a band playing with no tapes, just completely live and playing just kind of meat and potatoes rock and roll and with distortion and feistiness. And, you know, we're a rock and roll band and it's not rocket science, you know, so we're not really cerebral. We're not really bass. We're kind of just in that sweet spot, you know, so we like where we're at.
I can't complain about that either. there was a stat that came out just a few weeks ago that said like hard rock and metal is now once again the fastest growing genre. I guess sales wise is probably what they're basing that on, you know, so that pendulum just swings.
That's so crazy. You know, it's interesting because here we are we're on public radio right now, and we consider ourselves an alternative band, or like a from the punk underground, from the art punk scene, actually. But strangely enough, we get asked to do metal festivals.
Yeah.
So like we're the only women on the metal festival and they treat us great. And, you know, the tribalism of metal is amazing. And once you're it's like Cher fans. Once they love you, like they will love you forever, you know. So I am very pleased that metal is growing. And I think there's a lot of people in metal who are actually politically really hip.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's great.
I should also bring up, aside from that, part of the reunion and everything that's happened with L7 stems from a documentary that is on Netflix.
Netflix rejected it.
Oh.
And it's funny, too. And it's funny, too, because they have a female programmer who supposedly is a feminist, and she rejected our film. So there you go, you know, but it's on Hulu and it's on Amazon Prime. And yeah, it's from our footage from the 90s. We had a camcorder and we were shooting all the time. And so the bulk of the material is from our own footage.
Why would anybody reject? I'm still stuck on that.
Especially, you know, a feminist. I mean, come on.
No joke. So the reunion sort of, as I read, it kind of comes from that coming out and saying, well, let's put this together. What were those early sessions like? I mean, did you all, was it toes in the water or did you dive straight in?
Well, for the documentary, we all did our interviews separately, but I was the only one who was hearing all of them. So Susie got really vulnerable on hers. And so when she got vulnerable, I was like, okay, I'm going to let my guard down too, because this is a doc and we should, you know, be as truthful as possible, you know. Then I kind of let my guard down about how painful it was for the breakup and the loss of our friendship and all that stuff. So, yeah, but first we got together kind of doing that. I started emailing them on that, and then it was approaching them to discuss a possible reunion. And we didn't have a manager to do it at the time, so I was the one in the hot seat making the phone call, not knowing if I was going to be hung up on or whatever. But I did some Oprah and Deepak meditation sessions. If you've never done those, they're fantastic. And I got up the courage to call my ex-bandmates.
And so now, you know, chapter two, I mean, does it feel like the old days, or does it feel like this is different and fresh?
It feels like a victory lap. And it feels like, it just seems like people are starved in the audience. You know, it's a mixture of older people and younger people. So, I don't know. It's just incredible that our older fans have stuck with us for so long. And it's so incredible that the younger fans even know about us. So it's a pretty surreal gratitude moment each time we get on stage.
One of my favorite songs on this new record happens to be one of the latest singles and everything. Stadium West, the hook isn't even an actual word, is it? It's like a sound.
Oh, yeah, that's Susie playing the lead on that. Yeah. And then, I mean, the song is about using your, you know, everybody feels really kind of beat down sometimes, but especially about political things and social things, and you can use your wit as a weapon. And we're not powerless. And so Stadium West is about, it sounds like a violent song, but it's actually just getting some creative weapons for good instead of crappy things.
So it is kind of interesting the way the timing worked out. I don't know if you planned that, but the new album comes, you know, exactly 20 years after the last record. And talking about the Slap Happy album that came out in 1999. Which I think I've heard you say is one of your favorite. You have a high regard. You hold that one, I think, a bit more than people expect, because that was the last one, and then the band was over.
Yeah, and we did that all ourselves. We had been dropped by Warner Brothers. We fired our manager. There was a complete cleaning house, which got us nowhere. But we made that album by ourselves, and a friend of ours just produced it for free. Brian Hott, an angel. So we did that. And we just, I like that record because, you know, our records are like our children, which none of us have. So our records have to be our children. And this one's a particularly creative one. And also a little bit, you know, this one didn't go to Harvard. but they're colorful. So, yeah. So that's our Slap Happy record.
It did come right at the end of an era, but still in an era where the importance of being on a major label, if you weren't, then you barely existed, which we know now as we look back that wasn't the truth at all. There were so many great albums that weren't released on major labels. But I think, you know, it's sort of in the wide spectrum at the time. That's how it was looked. So having been out of the deal and been independent and doing it all yourself, did you feel like you were starting over to do it again? Or did you see that the end was in sight? Like maybe this is the end of the run?
We felt like we were hopeful that some miracle could happen, but it was feeling like the wheels were falling off because there was no money. Mm-hmm. Like once you have no bread and you're approaching 40, you're kind of, you know, in your late 30s, it's like, ooh, man. You know, we've got to make an adjustment here. So, it was a scary time because our skill level set is like in the real world. It's just, I mean,
I'm pushing buttons over
crazy.
Here. I get it.
Yeah, right. Exactly. No,
I totally understand. And it is a good record and probably one of the more unheard records of your catalog, unfortunately. I mean, it was sort of a different sounding band, and in some, it seemed like you guys were trying things that you hadn't tried yet, you know. But we were
trying stuff, different stuff just for kicks, because we're actually, our tastes in music are very wide in range. And yet to be this rock band that we started out as, like I said before, we had to be very tough cookies and kind of devoid of melody at times. Like our early stuff, I'm just like, wow, where are the hooks? Like we were just like all about distortion and like presenting this wall of grime. And then over time, we started adding more melody and more studio trickery, which we enjoy.
So back up 5 years to 1994, and that's when the Hungry for Stink record came out. So this is your first record post breakthrough, you know, Pretend We're Dead had happened. I feel like for a lot of bands and a lot of artists that I've talked to, there was an expectation to match the sound of the day. You know, you talk about, you know, yourself as an alternative band, but as grunge was the hip word at the time, was that pressure thrown on you all for the Hungry record?
Quite a few people thought that we were going to be the next Nirvana, and there were expectations of that, and we don't really know where that came from, but I think that, you know, it's my opinion. Bands don't sell records. Record companies sell records. So it's like you just make your record, and it's their job to sell it. And I like every one of our records. So it's like, you know, it's their fail, not our fail, if that record didn't do as well as our previous one, which it didn't. But it had great songs on it. So
I mean, just naming the singles here, too. Stuck Here Again and Can I Run, I think all got the official releases, and they're all monsters.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. I mean, you know, it was a good record. Some people's favorite record by L7.
Fuel My Fire went to get a second life when Prodigy covered it on Fat of the Land, which was a breakthrough record for them, too.
Yeah.
And sort of a different world. I mean, they were coming at it from a dance, you know, side of things at that point.
Aggressive industrial dance, yeah. And we didn't even know that they had covered it. And we were in France, and our French promoter played it for us. He's like, "Have you heard the Prodigy covering?" And we're like, "What?" And he played it for us, and we were just standing around the boombox like, "Oh my God, this is amazing." We were so flattered, and it was such a different take on the song, and they sold a gazillion records. And them covering that song got us out of the red with our publishing deal. So we still would have been, you know, breaking rocks in the hot sun with our publishing deal. And, you know, because I think, I don't know if they sold 10 million records.
It was a lot.
And it wasn't even a single for them. It was just like the last track on side B, you know. And that was really great.
And that's the only cover on that record that I remember. It's not like they did a handful. Like, this is the song they're saying
really
we're going to.
It's really bizarre. Yeah. I mean, no connection. You know, British guys, you know, they were just fans. So that was really cool. It didn't make us rich, but it got us out of the red.
Of course, we lost Keith Flint recently.
I know. What a bummer.
Yeah. Did you have any history with them in that way?
We played a couple festivals with them in Germany with Bowie headlining, which was amazing.
Wow.
Yeah. Crazy. And we had gotten bouquets from our French promoter, and I gave one to Bowie and I gave one to Keith from the Prodigy. So they were both very happy, and I was so happy to present them both these bouquets of flowers, because that's how I roll.
What a day. What a life. What a career.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Well, I think we'll end with that, with the song that Prodigy covered. We'll do the original here with Fuel My Fire from that Hungry for Stink record. But before that, Danita, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, Kyle. We really appreciate the support, man.
Yeah. Anytime. Keep the music coming. If it's a victory lap, I hope this victory lap sticks around for a few more albums.
Yeah, I hope it's 100-yard, not a 10-yard.
Exactly.
Okay.
And my thanks to Danita Sparks of L7 for dropping by the WFPK studios for that one right there. Again, the new L7 album is called Scatter the Rats. It's out now. Now, I'd caught up with Danita a couple years before this by phone when L7 had just put out some of the first new music since their reunion. So I wanted to include that interview here as well. And we do talk more about the reunion, about the first song that we heard from them called Dispatch from Mar-a-Lago, what that song means and what it doesn't mean. And we also hear more about the documentary that got the band back together called Pretend We're Dead. So stick around for part two here of Kyle Meredith with L7.
How are you doing?
And I'm just so excited that this is all happening, that there is an actual huge reason to be talking to you these days.
Yes, there is. Nice to have you. A lot going on.
Yeah. First off, I figure like where we should probably start off, you know, L7 is back together. It's not a brand new thing. It's now been a few years happening and in the making, with the tour starting first, but I'd kind of be curious, like, when did you really start considering firing this back up?
I think it was, I had been doing the Facebook page for a couple of years just to sort of archive photos of us, and I saw a huge outpouring of fans, and not just older ones who had seen us before, but fans who had never seen us, like younger people. And I just thought, and every other day they'd be like, reunion, you know, and it's not anything we ever sort of planned on doing. going. But when we discussed the idea, we were all in. So we figured better do it now, because we're not going to be able to do it probably in, you know, 5 years or something.
And, I mean, obviously, it had been happening a lot. A lot of the bands from your era had been reuniting. Did that play any part into it? Were you able to look at them and go, well, this is working. You know, it's working for these folks, so why not?
Yeah, you know, I've never been a big fan of bands reuniting. But I'm really glad that I did get to see the Sex Pistols and I got to see the Stooges. So, you know, as a fan, I dig it. As a band member, I was reluctant, because you don't know if you can be as good as you were or as exciting. But I think we're playing really well. So fans seem to like it.
I say so. I mean, this first single.
Yeah.
It's huge.
You dig it? The song is kind of about like the guys who like Trump's Secret Service people, or people in the military, or people who are like, who kind of have to pay attention to his communications, to his tweet. And if you're one of those agents, you've got to read every tweet. And it's like, is Miss Universe getting fat, or are we under attack? And when is it like a legit alert? You know what I mean? So it's kind of about the people who must follow him on Twitter, because that's their job. And it's this sort of idea of maybe a boy crying wolf, and when's it going to be legit? And then eventually an angry mob does storm the gates of Mar-a-Lago. So that's what it's about. It's not about us trashing Mar-a-Lago. It's about an angry mob doing it.
I feel like we could do this. You and I could do this interview on any day, any different day than even today. And I could come up with different talking points to go along with everything you just said. But with today, you know, first off, he's just said something about the calm before the storm, and nobody, and it's what you're talking about. Like, how's a Secret Service member supposed to take that? You know, no one even knows what that threat means.
What does that mean?
Like, it's,
how are we supposed to be prepared? You know, it's like, it's crazy talk. And we didn't, you know, the song is a fun, absurd track. Mm-hmm. We're not trying to make a very heavy statement here. It's just sort of in response to the insanity, you know? So we didn't get heavy with it. We just went kind of for the scenario of in my room, flying the drone,
right,
you know?
Right. It's almost
little
like
blue birds blowing up my phone. It's like, here comes the tweets. So that's where we're at.
But it's, I don't know. I do a lot of interviews, and most of the conversations I'm having these days, of course, somehow veer towards this. You know, politics and music are old bedfellows. You know, it's been happening for a long time. And I'd read that you guys kind of went into this with sort of the absurdity in mind, but at the same time, like, even knowing that, I wanted to throw my fist in the air for you guys. You know, it's sort of, you know, because that, you know, I feel like we're, you know, all, you and I at least, are all fighting on the same side, and even the absurd stuff still ends up saying so much. You know, as we look back at 20 years of The Daily Show, you know, the absurd stuff almost says it all these days.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, we didn't, our documentary was screened 4 days after the election in New York City. And it was the first screening of the doc. And people were just so devastated. And we really didn't set out to write a song about the president, but we felt it would be negligent if we didn't. There were so many of our fans like literally grabbing onto our arms, save us, you know. So you know, this is the way we wanted to do it, kind of get it out of the way, and then we'll see what else is written down the line. But this was sort of our, you know, coming out blazing with that.
I mean, you guys reunited in 2014, and now here's the song. But I will say, the necessity of L7 at this moment of time, you know, it is pretty well timed, I would say, because when you look back at your history, and of course, you know, there is a big notable point because of Rock for Choice that you helped start. And again, I can even look at the news today and say, and here he's pushing through something that makes it harder for women to get birth control through the Affordable Care Act. You know?
Yeah, I mean, you know, again, we did discuss, look, is this the first song we want to come out with? It's topical. That's not a thing. We usually do a topical material that can be dated, you know, but we were so like praying that the hurricane did not hit Mar-a-Lago and we were praying that he did not get impeached before we could get this track out. We felt so urgent, like, God, if he gets impeached, this whole track is like screwed, you know, like we'll have nothing, you know. So we felt an urgency to get this out. And we also felt that even though it is topical, I think we're one of the few bands who could actually sort of pull this off. Mm-hmm. Because we've always had a bit of humor to our political sentiments. Mm-hmm. Like we had a song, Wargasm, with the line, you know, tie a yellow ribbon around the amputee. So, you know, there's always, even though that is not funny, there is kind of a sardonic nature to our political or social commentary.
I mean, it's one of the reasons why I've always appreciated you all.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. The great, I mean, that's always saw the punk side of you guys. And you sort of came from an art punk scene and got lumped in with, you know, a generic term like grunge. But it's that humor and whatever, however, I don't know, seeing that fit into whatever you want to put the label on, which means much less these days than it used to. And I think that's really fun. But
yeah, I think that the art punk scene also had an appreciation of the absurd, and which I think we've always had as well. So it kind of fits in there. What we've always been very appreciative of is that we cross into the metal scene, we cross into the punk scene, the art scene. So it's pretty cool. Like in 1 week, we got an offer for a festival in Mexico City called Heaven and Hell, and it's a metal festival. And in this week, we got an offer to play John Waters' birthday party. So we're right there.
Yeah.
You know, like we've got the best of both worlds right there. So we are filled with gratitude.
But I did want to bring up the documentary. I pretend that we're dead, which I haven't been able to see yet. I cannot wait to see this. But when you guys are looking back on that, is it really about the band? Because and maybe it is, but I was sort of wondering, because the idea of L7 as a band has been one thing to me as a fan, but it's also been so much more. And it's because of what the things that you were just saying, because you fit into so many different scenes, because there was sort of a larger story to tell, you know, with the activism and things like that. So I'd kind of be curious, does the documentary hit on all of that?
It does. The documentary hits on all of that, and it's supported by the home movie footage that we've had all these years. So yes, it does tell our story, but it's also a really cool time capsule of that era, because videotape was cheap. Like once we bought the camera, the videotape was cheap, so we could film a lot. You know, it was before people had cell phones and you still had to pull over at a truck stop if you needed to make an emergency call or hitch a ride to a truck stop if your van broke down. So we were very engaged with each other. Even if we were mad at each other or in a big fight or something, we had to engage. We couldn't check out. So it was an interesting time, and it was because we could capture that on film. So it's a cool little, you know, chunk of that era.
When you're looking back at that and digging through all of that, and now here you are reunited and looking forward, I mean, does that past weigh on you at all? Like, do you have to consider that as you move forward?
I don't think so. I think maybe the past weighed on it a little bit more in our absence. But now the fans have been so great. The media seems like they've strangely matured in a way. They're not as obsessed on our gender that they used to be. Mm-hmm. And we're kind of considered more of a sort of a legacy band, which is amazing, as opposed to an all-female band, because the gender tag was something that it was tough to shake. You know, it was either we were a grunge band or an all-female band, and now we're just sort of a, you know, American rock band or rock band, you know, so that's kind of cool.
So this is one single. And I hear there is another single on a way. I of course have to ask the question, have you guys been talking about what happens after that, if there's an album?
Well, we're trying not to put too much pressure on us. Like even when we reunited in 2015, you know, I approached everybody and said, let's just play the old stuff. Let's not worry about doing any writing. Let's just have fun and play the hits, you know. But now that we've been doing that, it's sort of like, well, you know, all of a sudden we find ourselves jamming at soundcheck or at rehearsal and just kind of goofing off and doing some writing. So we're going to release another single and then we'll see where it goes. But I don't want to put the pressure on us, because I think it's, right now we're living in a real cool time capsule of like being able to release a track whenever the hell you want to. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to have that 4-month buildup for print press like you used to have to back in the day. You'd record something and have to wait 4 months. So, you know, for Rolling Stone to catch up with their issue, you know.
Right.
So now it's just much more immediate. And so that's really exciting. So we may drop a few more singles. I don't know, without even talking about doing an album yet or something. I'm not sure.
I'm just happy to have new music from you guys. I'm happy that you're doing anything and everything right now. So I'll take it how I can
right
get
on.
It at least. is there anything you can tell us about the new single? Or do we got to wait and be surprised?
You got to wait and be surprised. But I think you'll dig it, and I think you'll dig the title, but I can't tell you what that is. It's not going to be Dispatch from Mar-a-Lago. This will be our only track about Mar-a-Lago.
All right. Danita, it was really great talking to you. Thanks again for doing everything that you've done.
Thanks, Kyle. Thanks for the time, and we'll stay in touch.
All right. Sounds good.
Okay, man.
All right. Take care.
Okay, take care. Bye.
2017 interview with Danita Sparks of L7. Again, that was back when they just had the single, Dispatch from Mar-a-Lago. But now they've got the full album. I hope you check it out. It's called Scatter the Rats, and thanks so much to Danita for all the conversation in this episode. Now, before you get out of here, again, I hope you hit the subscribe button, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, wherever you're listening from. Follow along at that place as we do put out interviews every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at Consequence of Sound. After that, WFPK.org is where I am every Monday through Thursday from noon to 3 Eastern, where you can also find some bonus episodes of this series. Consequence of Sound has your music and film news. You can find me at Twitter at Kyle Meredith and Facebook/Kyle Meredith. And that does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.